SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website, too, stevebick.com. A midweek juncture that will see the weekend action later today. And we'll get the Saturday cards put together. New York back in the focus on Saturday, as we touched on with Andy. I haven't really looked too far ahead yet at some of the probables, but you know, two of the great juvenile standards of the fall, the Frisette and the Champagne on Saturday. I think we're going to run on Sunday, so might have to slip another Saturday Sunday into downstate into the plans. I got to massage it around with the Tina. Spencer had surgery on his hand yesterday, so I think I'll be able to. We should go see Spencer. And you know, by the way, she sees through that though. It's not transparent as can be. She doesn't. She looks and rolls her eyes. don't they, right? You can't put anything past them. So looking forward, though. I always like Wednesday for me. It's always a fun day because I'm always looking forward to the overnights coming out. And, of course, the Queen Elizabeth as well at Keeneland. Just actually heard from Marty McGee. Marty back in Kentucky from his week at Pimlico. And so we'll catch up with Marty, not today, but probably in advance, either tomorrow or Friday. And the schedule at Keeneland here as well, week two. And today, the Jessamine, I expect we'll hear from Ed DeRosa, and we'll do some handicapping of the Keeneland action. And these next 3 days, the Jessamine today, and obviously we'll produce starters for the Filly and Mare Turf. And it's a good field. The favorites and even the middle priced types make a lot of sense. That came up yesterday. Spanish Love Affair for Cassie, Aunt Pearl for Brad Cox. That Taylor's Tourist, the more I looked, and there was Robbie Alvarado, the more I looked at Taylor's Tourist, the more I liked. 6-1. And there's also Grand Motion with Batia. And so we'll talk to Ed, and just got the official confirmation. Ed will join us at 11. There's also today at Keeneland, second level allowance. One horse that I didn't bring up, if you were just listening to the replay here on SiriusXM, if you were listening to Todd Pletcher, one horse that I didn't get to was Current, and he runs today. He's in that mile and a half second level allowance, and mile and a half, and he's the co-favorite with Mike Maker. And of course, Maker, you can't run these kinds of races without without Maker. In this case, two of them. He's got 3-1 Bourbon in May with Florent Giroux, and he's got Gaffleon on Tide of the Sea. They're both, they're both eligible in here. The horse that caught my eye, and I'll be curious what Ed came up with. Last out winner at Kentucky Downs, and at a glance, doesn't necessarily look like he classes up with this group, but Celerity for Waylon Cundiff. Gabe Saya is aboard. Celerity, 8-1. City Zip 5-year-old coming off a starter 10 win at Kentucky Downs. And he's got races. He's got plenty of races that fit. And, you know, back during the summer meet, he ran in a very similar spot. He was 35-1, got beat 2 and change by Empire of War, who is a nice horse. Morocco also in there, Casaranga. Those were the three that finished ahead of him. So Celerity, I think, might be a little bit of a price, kind of a price boost for you to consider in there. So we'll talk a little Keeneland. And the rest of the week, if you haven't looked ahead yet, tomorrow, no stakes at Keeneland, but there is a nice middle portion of the pick five and the late pick four, second level allowance with some very nice types. And there's also pricey conditional allowance as the feature, which has got the likes of Mr. Dumas. And this is the spot that Jimmy Baker favored with Spectacular Gem. 3-1 with James Graham. English B, kind of a personal favorite. Graham Motion. This is a nice group. American Tattoo for Jack Sisterson. Big Score for Tim Yakteen. Ramsey Solution, Wesley. Yeah, very nice non-stake feature tomorrow. And, you know, I forgot to include, where is it? I got all these Keeneland. Here it is. Here's the Friday at Keeneland, looking ahead to the Buffalo Trace, Franklin County, the Turf Sprint. And again, if you haven't looked this far ahead, got stormy. I went to print PPs, and there was Got Stormy. And this is also the spot that Arno Delacour chose for Chalon when she was scratched over the weekend. This is a very nice group, too. Stillwater Cove makes her 4-year-old debut in here for Wesley Ward. Change of Control for Michelle Lovell. This is a very nice addition. This is always a good race. Winning Envelope for Bob Lothenbach and Chris Block. But, I mean, Got Stormy will be a prohibitive favorite as she prepares for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. She had run one other time at Keeneland, which was in one of the miles, right? Yeah. So she's going to get a tune-up for Breeders' Cup on Friday. And there's also on Friday, if you have, again, if you aren't digging in and getting out ahead of it, how about the return of Looking at Bikinis? Makes the 4-year-old debut for Chad, last seen in the Cigar Mile. And this is a kind of nice third-level allowance. Hog Creek Hustle, kind of trying to get the mojo going. Mucho, good old Mucho, who, you know, has kind of settled in as this kind of horse for Claiborne and Mrs. Dilschneider and Bill Mott. So, nice card on Friday at Keeneland as well. We're going to talk some Indiana today, Wednesdays, and terrific. The pick five, I'm going to write it up, and I won't be able to finish it until after the show because it is hard. I did the handicapping last night, then I sat down to write it up this morning and kept getting sidetracked, frankly. And it is deep. You got four stakes we're going to talk about with Bill Downs. And I also am going to reach out to Eric Hallstrom because there was quite a bit of hard news involving Indiana the last several days. And easily all of it positive. They've added 2 days in November to the end of the meet, the 16th and the 19th. That got approved. And the news yesterday, if you did not see this, Chris Paulson, long associated with Arlington, has taken the director of racing and racing secretary position in Indiana, and this is a significant hire and a terrific acquisition for Eric Hallstrom and Indiana Grant. And I don't think it, you know, it's an unfair statement at this point to say that the balance of, you know, Midwestern racing authority, you know, based on opportunity and purse levels, you know, other than Kentucky, of course, it is Indiana. It's, you know, it's been a spectacular year, and adding a, you know, adding an experienced, polished racing office director like Chris Polson is really a score for them. And he starts in 2 weeks, essentially, October 26th. So congratulations to Chris and to Eric Hallstrom. And there was also, I forgot to bring it up with Bill Downs last week, but the, they adjusted, you know, there was a little bit of a little bit of a hubbub last week, early in the week, where the jocks, you know, who can't use the gym facility and the hot box, because of COVID restrictions. And they, you know, they were vocal and kind of were demanding that the weight scale be adjusted for them in accordance with it. And that's happened. It happened in New York, and you know, it's happened widely. And they agreed to that. It took a, you know, took a little bit of, you know, back and forth, and within, I don't know, I mean, within there was a slight delay between races, and then that got locked in. So we'll talk to Bill Downs in the second half. We'll go through the sequence. I really am anxious for some of Bill's opinions to maybe help me, you know, finalize my liens and my ticket building, because as I said yesterday, the sequence, which starts with the second level allowance, then the four Indiana bred stakes, the Merrillville, the Florence Henderson, the Brickyard, and the AJ Foyt. And yikes. 10 by 7 by 12 by 11 by 12. And, you know, mostly in the stakes sequence, you're looking at, you know, horses that we've been seeing a good portion of the summer and into the fall in the stakes program. This includes Jeff Runco coming back for more. This time, maybe they'll see him coming. Flatter Him is in the Brickyard. And Flatter Him in this particular spot, a little tougher, I think, than the Governor's. And cutting back Flatter Him to 6 furlongs off the mile and 70 win in the Governor's, where he was 7-2. And what's interesting is he's 7-2 here, and we liked him, you know, in that spot in August. This is tougher. And he was an overlay going into that stake. Here he's an underlay. You got the likes of Operation Stevie and Two Last Words for Gleishaw. This is the whole sequence is very, very good and very tricky. So we'll talk to Bill Downs later. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillandale. Got to give you some sales results. Talk about the strong finish yesterday. Very positive for everybody involved. And the Timonium, the Mid-Atlantic event, post-Preakness, comes off very well. The New York Breds day one, and then a wider array of, yeah, you had Maryland's, you had Pennsylvania's, you had, you name it, Virginia's, Florida's, and Kentucky's, and a $270,000 Gunrunner colt out of Stormy Tack, bred by John Marshall, a Pennsylvania bred, consigned by Becky Davis, and Lamba Bloodstock takes this one home. And it was an interesting, there were a lot of interesting quotes if you read the sale follow-ups yesterday and this morning, because it seemed like a lot of buyers had specific horses in mind when they got there. And from that standpoint, a lot of them went home and were happy with, you know, with the horses that, that they were able to secure, including this Gunrunner colt, because the purchase, they thought was the best horse in the sale, and consigner wise, consigners were, I think, having had their expectations tempered. In a lot of cases, you saw some quotes, you know, some pleasant surprise type of quotes, that, you know, some of the horses in the middle range did okay. And when it came to the, you know, the average and the median, it was right in line, and some very positive feedback from Boyd Browning. Where's the totals? 379 yearlings for 9.1 million, average of 24,172, median of 14,000, and that was, you know, virtually, you know, even with last year. So that is nice. And of course, we're going to turn our attention to OBS next week. In fact, I got the catalog right here, and next Tuesday and Wednesday. So we'll look forward to a visit from Tom Ventura, and undoubtedly, I mean, and I think, you know, there's plenty of people that have yet to, you know, fill out their fall orders, as it were. So there's a bit of a select session on Tuesday. It's got colored pages, so it has to be select. there's also the open. You got select yearlings, and you've also got then open yearlings. Then you've also got on day one, you've got some horses of racing age and 2 year olds that are going to be offered too. So it's got a bit of a mixed feel, in addition to the, you know, the next round of yearlings. And I think the, let me go, but here's the book. Let me glance. I believe that the, when I looked at it the other, when it came in the mail, the racing age runners go first. Their hips, 1 through 50-something. Yeah, 1 through 53. And then they'll start to send the two-year-olds through. So, nice catalog. And look forward to tracking OBS next week as well. A couple of other notable sellers yesterday. Belle Gable Stable took home a flatter colt for $250. Street Sense colt to Vinny Viola and Mike Rapoli. Jacob West on hand for that. $240,000. A Maryland bred from the late Bob Manfuso and Catherine Voss. Chuck Zackney bought the most expensive filly, $140,000. For a Malibu Moon, bred Maryland bred from Candyland. And Liz Crow took home a Declaration of War filly for $135,000, bred by Equivine in Pennsylvania. And this, actually, I see that, Dan, news to use. That's this is a sibling of the Trombetta's stake runner, that news to me, that Mike bought for Marie and has had a lot of success. So half to a stake winner. And there was a Kentheros that Tanya Terranova signed for, Pennsylvania bred, colt, 135. So there's the top five or six sellers during the non-New York portion yesterday at Timonium. And then everybody went over to Michael's and had crab cakes. The other news yesterday, late in the afternoon, a panel created as a nominating committee toward the legislation and the creation of the Safety and Integrity Authority entity, as it were. A very interesting and eclectic group put together. And these seven nominees or nominating committee members will then put forward, you know, they'll call and consider nominations from really, I think, all areas of the industry. From what we can tell and from what we're hearing, you know, many different entities have been approached and asked for their thoughts and, you know, the people that they, you know, think might be good at this and be good fits for this, you know, these assignments. And the seven, let me give you a quick rundown of the seven that are going to be involved in putting forward and selecting the board members. It's Len Coleman, whose name baseball fans will know, former president of the National League. And Len Coleman will be a co-chair of this with Dr. Nancy Cox, well-known in Kentucky. She's vice president of the land-grant engagement, and she's the dean of the College of Ag, Food, and Environment at UK. Well-known in Kentucky education and racing and breeding circles as well. Katrina Adams, another name that sports fans might know, former president of the USDA, of the Tennis Association. She's been added. Dr. Jerry Black from Texas Tech. Nice to get, you know, a veterinarian involved. It makes a lot of sense. General Joseph Dunford. This was interesting. Former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Doesn't have COVID. He was served several longtime military assignments, including as the 36th Commandant of the Marine Corps, Dr. General Joseph Dunford. So you got a vet and a vet. Frank Keating, who's the former governor of Oklahoma and a longtime law enforcement official. So when it comes to the, you know, the protective bureau concept of this, of the program fits in. And the seventh member, who's someone I know, Ken Schanzer, the former president of NBC Sports, and you've heard Ken on the show, and a Colgate grad. No, Ken Schanzer, a long time, and he's obviously, you know, got plenty of understanding of the sport from, you know, serving at NBC. And in fact, I think when Ken was on, it was when NBC reacquired Triple Crown broadcast. When I think that's when I reached out to Ken at some point, and I think it was when NBC had either expanded some coverage of the game or specifics. But anyway, so it's a group that, you know, has some tangential connections to the sport in some cases, and at least, you know, some basis of understanding of, you know, what these, I mean, what this initiative, what it's supposed to be doing. So that's the first step. We'll see, you know, what names get, you know, get produced as this thing takes shape. We're going to take shape now with some guests, including Pete, have the opportunity to get caught up. We haven't talked to Pete in several weeks, so we'll get Pete Fornatale in. And I've also got to get you some contest results from the weekend. We'll do that as well. And I reach for there. There we go. I do have a couple of things that I haven't gotten to yet. You know, when you have these kinds of, you know, the post Triple Crown events. Dan Ross wrote a very interesting piece. Dan does such good work, and piece in the TDN that talked about the difficulties that have emerged from having all of the business essentially being conducted through the ADW system, and the difficulties that that provides when it comes to purse contribution versus, you know, the on-track handle, which, you know, invariably offers much more. So if you haven't seen Dan's piece from, must have been Thursday or Friday of last week. It's been sitting here, and I do want to talk about that. Pandemic in numbers, great for ADW, not so much for purses. And, you know, we brought this up, I think, most specifically when it came to Canterbury and, you know, how much, you know, they, with their strong live gate, you know, how it was going to affect them. So if you didn't see that piece by Dan, we'll get that figured in. And the rest of this, I think we got Pete. No, not yet. All right. Well, and there was also, speaking of handle, the numbers came out for September and over $1 billion. And of course, that's not an anomaly, but certainly a redistribution. Let's put it that way. With Derby coming in September, I mean, there's a lot of it's a lot of accounting work to be done to figure out, you know, where the numbers, you know, accurately lie. But I mean, just the fact that, you know, the business continues to conduct. I think we got Pete now. Pete Fornatale.
Can you hear me?
Well, a little bit. You're a little choppy.
All right. Well, let's
there we go.
A little sound here. See if we can make this thing so good to be back on your airwaves. I'd hate if people could hear. How about now?
You got a little electronic.
Maybe we should have Mark try to reconnect us. What do you think?
Now you're better. Now you're better. Whatever you did,
okay,
in between the two couplets there, you sound crisper.
I waved my hand like a wizard, and apparently that was the thing that did the trick today as far as audio goes. My father would be very proud.
I love it. Well, we haven't had a chance to talk pretty much since the end of Saratoga, and so much continues to just, you know, kind of flow by, and Pete, it's an interesting, it's been an interesting post summer with these two weekends with Preakness and Derby. I mean, it it provided plenty of content and engagement and opportunity. And I guess it ends up being a pretty healthy bridge toward, you know, towards Breeders' Cup.
It's been dizzying. I can't recall a weekend ever, especially when you factor in around the world, where there was so much stakes action relevant to the Breeders' Cup, but just in general, to have the normal, it's normally a smorgasbord and extravaganza between New York and Kentucky and California, and you throw in that supercard for the Preakness Day, along with all, you know, the stuff we're used to from Longchamp, and it was a true embarrassment of riches, and a really fun couple of days as a horse player and analyst. But I have to say, it was definitely a lesson in bandwidth and being spread too thin. I made some of the most amateurish betting mistakes I've ever made. And I just looking back, I think I was just trying to do too much, trying to fit too much in. So I think, you know, as crazy and fun as it was to have closing weekend at Saratoga be Derby and to have the Preakness be Fall Stars weekend, I look forward to it going back to the normal way of doing things so we can spread this out a little bit and give ourselves a break in it. And from a gambling point of view, a chance to focus. From a sporting point of view, this was fabulous, sort of a March Madness in the fall for horse players. But from a gambling point of view, I got my teeth kicked in a little bit.
I said that very thing last Thursday. I brought it up with Dick Powell. And in anticipation, and it didn't even have to be limited, to this past Saturday. If you go back, you know, the previous weekend where, you know, you had the double stack situation at Santa Anita because of the fires postponing the opening 3 days. And so you had this overlay of the extra 3 days of stakes. So the next thing you know, you had a dozen stakes out there. And, you know, New York and Churchill were semi-quiet, but there was, you know, other things going on. And then building into this, where I think the number was 29 graded stakes and then plenty of listed stakes. But I said to Dick, I'll give you an example. Like today, the Wednesday 11.9% takeout pick five at Indiana with four stakes, and then there's, you know, several good race opportunities at Keeneland. This is almost not almost. I mean, to me, the midweek has become a much better way to focus and to, you know, be able to concentrate as opposed to the, you know, the dizzying Saturday activity where you really can't. How are you supposed to watch the board when there's literally, you know, 14 stakes that are going to go on in an hour? It's just not it's not possible.
Too much.
No, it's too much. Exactly.
And it is sort of a lesson. I mean, granted, a lot of these things were scheduled long before the pandemic, but I think back to that, you know, early days pandemic racing when you had the eyes of the racing world on Fawner and Will Rogers, and the idea as horse players how it's nice to be able to really focus in on something going on, and how great it is that in a week like this we have that ability on stakes races, whether it's that card in Indiana or, you know, the Jessamine at Keeneland. I did a whole special podcast with Jim Goodman over on InTheMoneyPodcast.com about this late pick four at Keeneland, focusing in on the win and you're in Jessamine stakes. It is nice. Sometimes less is more. Sometimes more is more, but sometimes less is more. I think is a lesson we've learned throughout this year. And yeah, looking back to last weekend, that number, that's dizzying, and it makes me feel better. I was actually feeling a little guilty. I was like, man, there are graded stakes races. I don't even have time to handicap, but that's why.
Yeah, agreed. And you fold in, you know, things like, you know, the cross country, you know, which we engage in, you know, weekly, and you feel obliged, and also especially given, you know, the what goes on here, you end up handicapping the races, and you've got them printed, you've looked at them, and well, all right, I mean, I'm not going to avoid playing, but it you know, unless you've got a game plan really carefully laid out, and yeah, I guess there's a lot to be said for that, for, you know, making the same approach you make for Breeders' Cup, particularly, you know, where we talk about planning and picking spots and using them as a fulcrum in multi-race wagers. You probably are better served or best served on a day like Saturday of doing the same thing and just picking, you know, the handful of spots, you know, you're going to concentrate on, and not be pulled in too many directions at once.
I wish we'd had this conversation before last weekend. Because it's exactly right. You know, trying to do the 100% job on six races on a day like that is a lot better than trying to do the 80% job on 20. And I just think back, and same with Derby. I mean, the mistake I made in Derby, going back, I mean, we talked on the show with Marshall Graham about the weird vagaries in the place and show pools on Derby Day. And he even hypothesized the idea of Tis the Law paying as much to place as he would have to win. So I go, I make my wager before the race. What do? I bet the horse to win. No excuse for this silliness that, you know, if I'm sitting in my office, there's no way I make that mistake. But you're out there, you know, and look, I don't regret being out there in the world doing, you know, we were doing a really fun charity event at Taverna Novo and raising money for Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, which at the end of the day is much more what my life is about these days than gambling. But as somebody who at points has gambled seriously and for part of my income, I feel bad about myself for making such rookie mistakes. And it was the same thing in ticket construction on Saturday. Somehow, I wish I could give you a story and explain this one. Somehow I leave Channel Maker off of my bets. I really don't know how. I talked on the air how I thought it was, you know, pretty much down to two horses and the, you know, Channel Maker being one with maybe the interesting, you know, German Raider as a stranger. And somehow I play my tickets with the Master Craftsman and the German, and I don't play the obvious favorite. It's hard when you're getting pulled in 17 different directions. And I think you're right. The Breeders' Cup is a good example where that's a day where I'll look at other things, but in my betting, I'm focused on the task at hand, which is those Breeders' Cup races. And I don't mess around doing much, if any, other betting that weekend. And that's tough enough with 14 races, but I've, you know, over the years honed it and found it doable, and it's spread over 2 days. But don't underestimate the ability to the extra edge it can give you to merely be focused and try to separate what you might be looking at because you're a fan and you follow the sport, and places where you actually want to reach into your pocket.
Yeah, and I basically made my weekend Friday and Saturday rather than Saturday and Sunday, and actually missed a horse that I wanted to bet that was on the card at Keeneland on Sunday. You know, you got family life to deal with too, and so, you know, there were some things that, and I'm doing with Tina. There's a horse that actually there's two performances from Keeneland I want to slip in that haven't come up yet in the crush of stakes action. But first of all, Nick's Go managed to, you know, kind of resurrect himself, and the. The enigmatic Knicks, as it were, in the hands of Brad Cox for these last couple of starts. And he certainly looked okay when we saw him in February when he won it at Oaklawn, but then disappeared again and resurrected himself here, you know, months later. He ran in February and won, got 100 buyer, a career best, and then shows up at Keeneland on Sunday in a allowance and romps by 10 and gets a 107 buyer. So the Painter Colt, the Maryland bred that, you know, started out with Ben Colebrook and flashed some ability and then became a problem. And so he seems like he's back alive, and this was a mile and a 16th. So you imagine that he becomes a live candidate for the dirt mile.
Yeah, the fact that they spotted him in an allowance race, especially a horse like that that's had obviously issues, it says to me that they're really thinking of being able to pull back-to-back races together. And as you point out, that race came back super strong on the clock and super strong visually. Now, sometimes they'll do too much in the prep race and they'll still react to it. But I got to think the hands he's in and the way that being spotted so cautiously that he should move forward from that spot. And that, you know, that dirt mile, a race that I have mixed feelings about for various reasons, but we have seen some very interesting runnings of it, and Nixco certainly adds intrigue. I'm very curious to see if he can build on that performance, because if he can, I mean, this is an obvious contender. What did you say? It came back a 107 on the buyer?
107. Yeah. And he doesn't. I don't know how much he's got to build on it, frankly, to impact.
Right on that race back, and you're right there. Yeah,
exactly. There's also a horse that's a crazy story, and in the fifth race, an hour later after that K Nix performance, the grass is blue, turned up, and this is a fun story because Lou Lazzanero. Louis was watching a race at Monmouth. He was waiting for – there was a race or a horse that he was watching, and he saw the grass is blue break her maiden for $25,000 at Monmouth and win off by eight. And the race didn't come back particularly fast, came back a 47 buyer. But Louis – just was so impressed, and he called, his circle of people, and they reached out, and they bought the horse from John Stevens, and she shipped over, and Chad got her at Saratoga, and Chad was apparently, he said, this, she's really pretty. She's a broken vow filly. So, Lou told me the story. He goes, I bought this. You got to watch this race. We were having dinner at Nove. And he says, I got to show you this horse we just bought privately. The grass is blue. So I watch it, and it was like she won by, 8, 9, 10 lengths. And she came back and won that allowance race really nicely. She ran kind of erratically in the stretch. She like a broken field, like a fullback, and under Tyler Gaffleon, and paid $11.80. So the grass is blue, and the race came back moderately. 70 something buyer, not a 72 buyer, not a big fig, but it's kind of a fun story.
That is a great story. I was wondering about that when I was on TV in the UK and got caught out by that performance. I had been just looking at the figure, and obviously you noticed the barn change. Not one you'd rule out, but certainly not one I was expecting that from. But the thing that strikes me is what you said. When they're in the hands like the grass is blue is, and they're running erratically through the stretch, you think about, it just feels like there's room for improvement there. That same old idea that a coach would rather have the slightly slower runner with the weird mechanics than the runner running faster but who's doing everything correctly, because there's obvious things to work on and potentially improve. So could be an interesting runner to see where that one develops. And it sounds like the faith lose faith in the eye test from the Monmouth race is being rewarded already. I mean, hey, winning races at Keeneland is no small feat.
Not at all. And while we're talking about some offbeat performances and notable wins, one that you will certainly appreciate, yesterday at Finger Lakes, as we told you, the aspirant following up from Monday's Lady Finger, and Thin White Duke it follows up the Funny Side win at Saratoga with a win here. And I'll tell you what, at 3-5, he looked like a chicken in a pot. At about the, with about 300 yards. And then all of a sudden, Kevin Navarro got him motivated, and he he made up a good deal of ground in about, I don't know, the 16th of a mile, and you know, ended up winning by 3/4. So congratulations to Phil Gleaves and to Steve Crist, Ken DeGrette, and Brian Hilliard. Thin White Duke, for a horse that had been a maiden literally a month ago, suddenly is made of $250,000.
Amazing. I had the pleasure of having Steve and Chris on the network to talk about, actually, it wasn't my, Steve and I were guests with Naomi Tucker on Talk Racing to Me, and I was speaking to Steve off air, and they were weighing up the spot in New York and the spot at Finger Lakes, and he was like, well, at the end of the day, we had the opportunity to run for more money against seven maidens than to run in New York for less money against the seven horses who'd won. Seemed like a no-brainer. In the end, it was. I was cheering them on and happy to see Thin White Duke get the money, and then I went and put on Bowie's Station to Station to celebrate.
We had Steve on after the maiden win because, of course, it had been such a harrowing summer before the yeah. Funny Side win. Oof. With the two, you know, the frustrating misses for Thin White Duke and Steve's first and now second win. And, of course, Phil bred this horse, and it's a nice story. So Thin White Duke now back-to-back wins. And actually, this thing went... This purse was $120,438 using, you know, the Futurity style payments, and so Thin White Duke has made $200,000 despite, you know, the fact that he was 0-4 before the maiden breaking stake win. Should talk, Pete, too. We had the breaking news, as it were, and had the visit with Keith Shamblin. Last week to talk about Vegas being postponed till August. What was your reaction, and what kind of reactions have you heard?
I haven't talked to too many players. One thing that I'm really happy about is the fact that the qualifying period is still going to be the same. So rather than pushing that back, it's not going to mess up the following year's event. The qualifying is going to end at the same period where it was, and I think they were in a really tough spot. They had to make some tough decisions. The sort of Occam's razor solution that many fans wanted to see, which would have been a hybrid event where you could go to Vegas and also play online. Unfortunately, with just the legality of things, from what I understand, that just wasn't possible. So they had to choose between, you know, an all online or doing what they did. I mean, selfishly, I probably would have preferred an all online, but I get it. They're in a position. They've got a contract. They've got this decisions going on there that I don't know exactly what they are, but I can't imagine they were easy to make. And this feels like a compromise decision that, you know, keeping our fingers crossed, of course, about the trajectory of the world and this illness, that hopefully a lot of players will be able to go. I liked also that they were talking about coming up with some sort of proxy system, not unlike the proxy system that Jim Goodman and Tim Schramm and the folks at the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge are trying to come up with for folks to be able to play that great event in just a few weeks' time, even if they can't physically be there. That's another thing I really liked about the NTRA announcement. I think it's going to be, obviously, a bizarre NHC. I can't imagine I'll be able to get out there, which will be upsetting. Maybe I can, you know, maybe we can co-host over Zoom or something. I don't know. But we'll see how that all shakes out. But I guess the best news of all is, hopefully, again, trajectory of the world permitting, it won't be that long. It was clearly going to be, you know, impossible to super tricky somewhere in there to do something in the usual time frame. So to be able to keep the continuity of the event, to be able to come up with solutions for people to play who can't get there, and then to only have to wait a few months until the next one, I think in the real world, it's an acceptable solution. And, yeah, I should talk to more players. You know, it's funny. I miss it because I do so little with contests these days in just the normal context of my job, you know, with notable exceptions of promoting things like the Keeneland Fall Challenge, which we'll talk about in a bit. But I'm not as, like, my finger isn't on the pulse as it usually is, to where I haven't heard from a lot of players, but I would think the consensus is like similar to what I'm saying, which is it's good they're coming up with alternative solutions and good that the event is gonna survive. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh, it would have been just great to keep it, do it a hybrid online. But again, that just from a legal point of view, what I think most people would have wanted isn't possible. And so they were dealt this hand, and they came up with a solution that I think will hopefully work.
Agreed, and you know, buying time essentially, you know, made perfect sense, and you know, the same, essentially the same calendar for qualification will start the 2022 scenario beginning of February, and so none of that changes. And for the most part, you know, we had obviously Nick was on with us, Nick Tamara was on with us hours later, and you know, Nick echoed, you know, some of the same themes that I brought up with Keith, including the wider array of quality racing that would be part of the lineups and the electives for everybody. I mean, you're going to have Del Mar and Saratoga, obviously, you know, the focal point. But, you know, I suppose some people will miss Fairgrounds and Oaklawn, but it does... It is essentially, Pete, kind of a shuffling of the deck, because there's going to be, you know, some tracks and some things that are going to be a little different for players, and it may you would think one thing that is included is going to be more. I'm just thinking of this out loud. There'll be a lot more turf racing opportunities. Than we get sometimes during the winter session. And from that standpoint, you probably got the turf players will be very pleased with this development.
That makes sense. You do hear sometimes people complain about the traditional data, though, but the quality of racing. That's out the window now. You're right. Echoes of the old win contest, and John Avello used to run things out there when that contest was all Saratoga and Del Mar. So you're going to see better horses. You're going to see higher quality racing. You're going to see a lot fuller fields. It's going to be interesting. It'll be more challenging for the pen and paper handicappers, for sure, just trying to catch up on what's going on out there. But there has been a vocal segment of contest players from since I came into looking at the contest world who've wanted more championship level racing to accompany the championship level handicapping contest. So it'll be a little thought experiment, not a thought experiment, a little laboratory to see how that works out. I have a feeling, I love the fact that the traditional days that the NHC kind of owns that weekend and becomes, you know, as big, if not bigger, than the game. But, I mean, hey, we've seen this in a lot of different aspects of life in 2020 where the deck is shuffled and we're doing all kinds of different things, and some of them are going to stick and some of them are going to be one-year experiments, and that's fine.
Well, you mentioned Keeneland, and we got a few minutes. I know that some players are headed that way. In fact, my man Tony Montanino, North Carolina Tony, is all excited about heading to Keeneland this weekend. A little bit, some details of what Jim has got in store for everybody.
It's fantastic what he's done. So it's not dissimilar to how he ran the Grade 1 Gamble in July, but with some key wrinkles, including what you mentioned about him being able to accommodate with great priority to people who are in non-parimutuel states, or even in the case of Tommy Massis, Canada, being able to come down and actually play from Keeneland. Severely limited number of people, but that is possible for folks who want to reach out to Jim. Probably the easiest way to tell you to get in touch with him from here is to hit him up on Twitter, at Keeneland Jim. But if you want to get in touch with him, he gives his full contact info on the podcast I just dropped with him over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com, or reach out to me through InTheMoneyPodcast.com, and I'll make sure to put you in touch if that's of interest. But the great news is, if you're in a parimutuel state with one of the participating ADWs, you can play right from home. You can. Some of the ADWs do close Friday at noon. That's an important date to keep in mind. Others, you'll be able to register Saturday morning. For all the details, just go to InTheMoneyPodcast.com/Keeneland, and you can get the form to sign up and see all the rules. But essentially, it's a $3,000 contest where 1,000 will fuel the prize pool, 2,000 will act as a live bankroll throughout the Keeneland Saturday card, which has, you know, three stakes races. Looks like it's going to be very good stuff. And it's the other thing that's great about it is Jim supplements the prize pool. So not only is there 0% takeout from the entry fees, but he will essentially kick back, rebate some money that they take in takeout to add extra cash, NHC seats, and Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seats. So it's a great opportunity. I would say if you're somebody looking for, whether you're looking for BCBC or a smart way to get your NHC seat, this is a contest where you can get into the lower rungs of the money and get compensated. And it's hard to know how many people are going to show up, but he had over 200 participate with similar financial terms in the Grade One Gamble back in
right.
July. He's concerned with so much else going on contest-wise that they're not quite going to get there. I'm not so sure he's not going to get there. So that would mean something on the order. I should have the numbers right in front of me. I don't. But, you know, 10 to 15 seats being given out plus cash. It's going to be a robust prize pool. It's a great opportunity. It's great racing. Jim, as we all know, runs a great contest. And one other wrinkle, those familiar with Jim's contest where you usually have to do that little dance where you have to turn over half your bankroll in the last two races, that is not involved because of the difficulty tracking it this time around. So that's on the cutting room floor for now. And, yeah, for more information, probably the easiest thing is just to use the pretty link on my site. You can hunt around on the Keeneland site and find it, too. It's through there, the ticketing area.
I'm just sending the tweet out with the
beautiful.
With the page. And Jim, you can reach out to Jim as well. Jim is Keeneland Jim on Twitter, but jgoodman@keeneland.com. It's a $3,000 buy-in, $2,000 on the bankroll, and as indicated, you've got the nice variety. Virtually everybody, has got either TVG, ExpressBet, Naira Bets. Even you poor unfortunates in New Jersey, I have yet to ever see a tweet saying how wonderful everybody loves their four New Jersey bets account, because you are restricted, but everybody that essentially has any of the major ADW accounts, you are all. Have an opportunity. Deadline is noon Saturday, and if you're a TVG player, you're used to it. TVG players have to register by noon tomorrow. Usually it's late in the afternoon, but tomorrow, noon, TVG players, be aware. Register by noon tomorrow, all right? And everybody
Friday.
Else,
oh, that's
noon
great.
On Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right?
Gotcha.
So that's I just set that out.
Got to get involved. Other options you have until Friday, and then I think some you go all the way to Saturday. I would say don't leave it late. Sign up ASAP and just make sure you get your spot because as contests go, there's the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, there's the NHC, and then if you ask me to pick the next thing, Jim's Keeneland contest. I think that's where I'd go. Nothing against Nate, obviously newbie out in California. They do a fantastic job with all of their events. But there is something special about these Keeneland events too, and many fewer opportunities to participate. So don't miss out on yours.
Well, there it is. It's up there for everybody, and I know that everybody was a lot of people were out in front of it, and there's been plenty of chatter. So now you're down to some short strokes. Pete, you've been doing before we wrap up. You've been doing a lot of the fun, the revival of the fundraisers on Fridays and leading toward Breeders' Cup.
Having so much fun with these horse player happy hours. I think JK is going to be with me again on Friday. All the money gets donated to the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance and Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, all the big, I guess I should say. One other fun charitable thing, too, Steve, we haven't talked about on these airwaves. Did you know we have created an In the Money podcast whiskey? It cannot be purchased. It can only be obtained through a donation to the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation over at trfinc.org/players. And it's basically a barrel pick that I made. I went back in February, seems like a million years ago, but it was only February. Went to the Albany Distilling Company, tasted from a bunch of barrels, and picked out my favorite one. It's an American malt whiskey. So it drinks somewhere between like what you'd expect from a bourbon and a scotch. And it's got a fun label. You got JK and I on a whiskey label. What more could you want? And that one, all that, this is just a donation to me. I've just paid for it, and then I'm giving bottles to people who make the appropriate donation over there. And I'm telling you, the stuff is good.
Nice. That's cool.
And then folks can also join in for those happy hours, as you mentioned. We're going to have a three-track contest. Should be really fun. We had various special guests. It's been so much fun dealing with it. It's cool to have it back in a three-track format. It goes very fast. We'll have Keeneland, Santa Anita, and Belmont involved, and it's basically to start your journey to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. You can win your $20 buy-in, gets you into a feeder on Saturday over at horseplayers.com. Of course, you can buy in directly on horseplayers.com, but it's kind of fun to get in for short money. We usually have a good time going through the leaderboard and talking about who's doing what. And we've had some real top-notch players on there and some great stories as well. And you can watch the live stream through the Breeders' Cup social media, or you can just participate and follow along online. We also drop a podcast version of those shows because they've sort of evolved into where they're almost more preview shows of the winning you're in action at the weekend. We do cover the contest live, but there's a lot of other fun stuff as well. Folks want to check that out over at our feed and our website, but appreciate the chance to plug it and our friends at Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance and also Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation really do appreciate the chance to spread the word.
Outstanding, Pete. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll be watching, and we'll check in as we approach Breeders' Cup.
I hope so. Always a pleasure to catch up with you and the At the Races listeners, Steve. I hope we get a chance to chat again soon.
Absolute. Looms boldly, everybody, and all the activity, the In the Money Players podcast and associated showings. And you mentioned Jonathan. We're all sending the best wishes to Jonathan, whose father is ailing with COVID and dealing with some of the blood clotting issues, and suffered some real complications. And we all pulling for him and thinking about him. So best of luck to Jonathan with his dad. Let's take a break here, top of the hour. And when we come back, we've got visits with Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Tim Layden from NBC Sports. And boy, you got to really hold yourself back from saying Tim Layden from Sports Illustrated. Certain things are ingrained. Later, Bill Downs, Indiana, and we'll go over that terrific stake sequence. Ed DeRosa will recap the weekend. We'll get Ed's perspective on Swiss Skydivers' win, and we'll also talk some Keeneland with Ed, and of course, Seth Merrow. It's Wednesday, hour two at the races. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, The Best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.